should be clever, and the girl should be peaceful. Then when they grow up, they'll be good.
Never thought this many kinds of sound can come from a kid.
it's impressive. A little embarrassed, the saintly Babaji said, "Saintly brother, I will teach you as far as I am able, but I am not qualified to be an initiating spiritual master. However that may be, you should now learn about the pure Vaishnava religion." Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is the original spiritual master of the entire world, teaches that there are three basic truths in the Vaishnava religion. They are Sambandha, the relationship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the individual spirit soul. 2. Abhideya, the activities in that relationship. And 3. Prayojana, the final goal, which is pure love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. One who understands these three truths can act properly. He is a pure Vaishnava, or a pure devotee of the Lord. Within Sambandha, there are three distinct truths. 1. The material world, or the illusory potency Maya. 2. The individual soul, or the subordinate living entity. And 3. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is one and unrivaled, the master of all powers, all attractive, the abode of all opulence and sweetness, and the only shelter of both the individual spirit souls and the illusory potency Maya. Although he is the only shelter of both the individual spirit souls and the illusory potency Maya, he is always supremely independent, and his transcendental form is both sublimely handsome and eternal. The impersonal Brahman effulgence is merely a distant reflection of the splendor of his limbs. With his potency of transcendental power, Aishi Shakti, he manifests the material universes and places the individual souls within them. Then he expands to become the Supersoul. As the Supersoul, he enters the material universes. In this way, he is the supreme controller. When he manifests his feature of supreme opulence, he is Lord Narayana in the spiritual sky. When he manifests his feature of supreme sweetness, he is Lord Krishna Chandra, the gopi's beloved in Goloka Vrindavan. His different forms and pastimes are all limitless and eternal. No person or thing is his equal. Nothing is superior to him. All his forms and pastimes are manifest by his para shakti, transcendental potency. Of his many different transcendental potencies, three are especially known to the individual souls. One of these potencies is called the chit potency. Employing this potency, the Supreme Personality of Godhead enjoys all his transcendental pastimes. Another of these potencies is called the jiva potency, or the marginal potency. By this potency, limitless individual souls are manifested and maintained. The third potency is called maya potency. By this potency, all material things, material time, and material activities are manifested. The Supreme Personality of Godhead has a relationship with the individual spirit souls. The material energy and the individual spirit souls have relationships with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead and the individual souls both have relationships with the material energy. These different relationships are called Sambandha. Sambandha is understood when one understands these different relationships. Without first understanding these relationships, it is not possible for anyone to become a pure Vaishnava. So now he's describing to two, he's now starting to train Lahiri Mahashaya in the Vaishnava tradition. So of this, most essential is understanding these three tattvas, the Sambandha, the Abhideya, and the Prayojana. Because if that is understood, then one actually understands everything, how to behave, how everything functions. Because everything can fit into these three categories. There's nothing in the scriptures, there's nothing in any activity or that cannot be categorized in these three. So if one understands this, then he can actually understand what's going on in the whole, you know, the whole in the spiritual and the material world. So it's a very essential point. Okay. So here he started to explain some, that means the how you say it, the Sambandha is the relationships, the Abhideya is the activities within that relationship, and Prayojana is the goal. So the relationship is that we have Krishna as the Supreme Lord, we're his servant, the material nature is one of his energies that's to be engaged in his service. That's the basic principle of Sambandha. Abhideya, the activities that the living entity performs for the Lord's pleasure. And the Prayojana is the pleasure of the Lord. That he is that developing that pure love for the Lord and him being pleased by these things. So that is the relationship. And then here it explains that first point, there's the Supreme Lord. So in this, then, the biggest thing of these three is to understand the Supreme Lord, because he's the source of everything, so he's the biggest topic of them all. then when we understand him, his position, and then we can understand our position, we can understand the material energy, and then the relationship between us and the Lord, the material energy and the Lord, and us and the material energy. So that's the whole. Then you can know what to do with something. If you don't know the relationship, you can't actually do anything. So any if there's an activity, then these three must be applied. Like that, because the central feature is the activity. That's what one is trying to obtain, is proper activity. So you want to do anything. Let's say you want to, you want to use a knife, right? And you want to cut a potato, right? So then one has to understand the relationship between, you know, your hand, the knife, the potato, and, you know, how, what is going to be the steady, the platform between, you know, that's going to help in the cutting process between the knife and is on the other side of the potato, right? So if we don't understand, you know, if we take the potato and, you know, in our hand and then try to, you know, push it on the handle of the knife, we're not going to get much. So we have to know what goes where. The knife goes in our hand, but which hand goes in our hand, right? So the handle goes in our hand, right? And then with the knife, then which side goes towards the potato, right? So hand and knife, then it's the handle goes in our hand, but the blade goes with the potato. But now which side of the blade? Right? There's the sharp side and there's the dull side. So we have to know the sharp side of the knife goes with the potato, right? And then the potato, where is it? You know, do we throw it up in the air? I mean, it's like, so, and then you have the table. So the knife is on top, the potato's in the middle, and the table's below. Right? If we try it the other way, then the forces of gravity make it a little difficult. You know? So once one understands all this, then it makes some sense. Right? You can actually do the activity of cutting the potato. Right? So what's the goal? You want the potato cut. Right? So then you have to understand all these things, then the activity can be done properly. So unless these three understood, no activity can be done. Yeah. So we've already discussed in the previous chapter about all the conditioned activities. So the Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojana that is there in the material world. right? The goal is the heavenly planets, so therefore then there's us and the items of ritual, and then the ritual is performed as the Abhideya that will get us that goal of the heavenly planets. You know, or our goal is the Brahman, and then there is ourself, you know, ourself and the material energy. And so then what is the process? We don't deal with it, right? We just study and develop the Gyan. So you have our intelligence, you know, and the scriptures. So then in that way it works, but those are all temporary. That's not the eternal religion. So the eternal religion then will be described as relationship between God, the living entities, and the true world. That's why it's always described. Otherwise, you could describe some relationship of anything. You know, the computer and the table, right? That's relationship. If it goes on top, then you can read it. If it goes on the bottom, it's hard to read. So that has already been discussed in the last chapter. So now, or the previous part of this chapter, so now Lahiri Maharshi wants to know the actual spiritual subject matter, the paravidya. The aparavidya means the material knowledge. That means how the material energy is then engaged in the Lord's service. So it still comes back to the same thing. But the technical points of the aparavidya, or the material knowledge, then technically to work it, it doesn't have to be connected to God. But if you want to get a spiritual benefit out of it, you have to connect it to God. Right? Just like you can... The technicalities of Sanskrit grammar, you don't have to be God-conscious to learn them. Like that. Plenty of grammarians are not Vaishnavas. So it doesn't take that, or astrology, it doesn't take that one is a Vaishnava to know it, to mechanically work it. Or ritual, you don't have to be a devotee to mechanically work it. Or logic, one doesn't have to be a devotee to mechanically work it. Like that, you know, any of these Vedic sciences. But if you want to purify yourself and go back to Godhead, then you have to know the connection. So therefore then, God, ourself, and the material energy. So when we say Samman Abhideya Projan, that's the real. The other is a temporary definition of them. It's a temporary definition. But the actual real definition has substance, then is this what he's describing now. Yeah. Okay. Any questions on that? Yeah.
This is what we generally hear, that there's a supreme order. The material energy and the individual souls are the detached shakti. And in the first chapter, when there was a description of the position of the individual soul, there was something said that it's this detached shakti that actually manifests the material universe and makes it possible for matter and spirit to connect. What was that?
I only a little idea of that. So. And understand. So the Krishna is mentioning in the Gita basically the same point, is that it's the living entities that are making this material world happen. And he's describing that in Gita. We know it's because Krishna has entered the material world. Therefore it's going on. The living entity can't do anything, but it's because the living entity desires to be here and do all these activities. That's what's sustaining the universe. It's the desire of the living entities. And to fulfill that desire, then Krishna is entering in and making it happen. You know, just like you have in a household. Now, the parents are actually what's running the place. They are maintaining it and, you know, organizing it and all that. But it's because of the children that they're doing that. Right? So you can say the child is sustaining the household. Because if the child's not there, then why have all the house have all these different things? You know, that will be there in the parent's mind. You understand?
Yes, you know,
so in other words, the Tathasta Shakti, these living entities, is because of their desire, therefore then the material world is manifest. Otherwise there's no need. Right? Because Krishna and the internal potency won't deal with it. Right? Krishna is there, the spiritual potency is there, so then naturally behind the spiritual potency will be a shadow. Right? Krishna is like the sun. Right? So when he shines on the internal potency, it will create a shadow behind the internal potency. Right? But that connection is the tatastha. So Krishna is not going to deal with that shadow, and neither is the internal potency. But the living entity, it has an interest. So those souls that are interested, therefore then it will be manifest where Krishna will then take part and do things with it. Because he's only entering it because of the living entity. He's not entering it otherwise. So does that make any sense? That's as much as I can understand that.
Manifests the material energy, material world, because of the living entity has this engine propensity. It's Anna engine propensity. From Taittiriya
Upanishad.
Yeah, it's this kind of thing. So if the living entity wouldn't desire to enjoy, then Krishna wouldn't even make it.
It means it'll be there, but it won't be operated. You know? So the shadow is there, it has no substance. So the living entity wants to enjoy the spiritual nature. So that's not allowed, because he's not an enjoyer like that. So then Krishna has to enter and operate the material energy so it becomes attractive. Because what we're attracted to in this material world is not the material world, it's Krishna. There is nothing attractive here for the living entity. Like that, it's dead matter, so it has nothing to do. One's attracted to something that's like us, right? You know, humans are attracted to humans, dogs to dogs, or, you know, it's like whatever, we find something common, because you have to create relationship, right? So there must be something common to create a relationship. Once the relationship is there, then there can be activity. So there has to be something common. So there's nothing common between the living entity and the material world. Not other than that they are energy of the Lord, but otherwise, the way you would relate, there's nothing in common. It's dead and we're conscious, right? It doesn't do anything, we're active. It has no conscience, there's nothing to relate. So Krishna enters it, so that's what makes it attractive. So whatever is attractive in the world, it's actually Krishna. But we don't understand that. It's like if you put, you know, like a colored piece of glass in the window, you know, and it'll be dark. So it's not attractive. We put a light behind it, then it glows nicely, it has a nice color. Then we think the glass is very attractive. But actually it's not. It's the light behind the glass. Like that. So that attractiveness of whatever's there in the world is actually Krishna. But we're not seeing Krishna. We're seeing the material energy. Therefore, there's so much these technical descriptions of how Krishna has entered this material energy and is operating this material energy. So that one can see Krishna in the material energy and his working, rather than see the material energy and that's all. Right? Means anything that's, let's say, yeah, anything attractive. Krishna is the one who's all attractive. So it's his attractiveness that we're seeing. That's all. But we don't. You know, but at the same time, he says, all things are in me, but I am not in them. You know? Because otherwise then we'll see, oh, we're very attracted by some material thing, a material object, like a car. So we understand, well, the attractive feature of the car is Krishna. Right? Krishna's all beauty, so the car has, you know, is designed nicely, so it has some beauty. Right? Krishna's power is coming from him, the car has some power. Like that. Yeah, so all these things are coming from Krishna, so that's what's attractive in it. But we see the car, we don't see Krishna. So then, if we take this philosophy and misuse it, then we go, well, the attractiveness is Krishna, so the car is Krishna, therefore it's all right for me to be attracted to and enjoy the car. Therefore then Krishna says, but I'm not in them. Because it's not. What we're attracted to, that's not Krishna. Like that. That's why as it changes, as the modes of nature change, then one design, some fashion, some car, some architectural design, you know, what's today is very attractive and everybody's attracted to it. Tomorrow, nobody wants to look at it. Because Krishna's then moved that attractiveness to some other place by the effect of the modes. Like that. So therefore then it's not attractive anymore. You know, you can't understand how anyone could be attracted. Though we ourselves were attracted previously to the same thing. So it's just, he moves the modes and therefore then we're attracted here and there. Otherwise then we get bored. If we get bored, then what would we do? That makes sense. Anything else? Okay. Lahiri Maharshi said, from the Vaishnavas themselves, I have heard that Vaishnavas surrender to their emotions and therefore they have no need for knowledge. What kind of statement is that? I myself, up to this time, have chanted the holy names of Lord Hari only to attain a certain feeling. I did not strive to understand any relationships. The Babaji said, a Vaishnava's feelings of ecstatic love are the final result of his devotional service. However, such love must be pure. They who think that this ecstatic emotion culminates in oneness with the impersonal Brahman cannot have actions and ecstatic emotions that are pure. Their pure ecstatic emotions are all an empty show. A single drop of pure ecstatic love fulfills all the desires of the spirit soul. However, when that emotion is contaminated by impersonalism, the only result is trouble and calamity for the spirit soul. The devotional emotional displays of one who in his heart thinks he is not different from the impersonal Brahman are merely a trick to cheat the innocent people. Therefore, pure Vaishnavas must thoroughly understand these relationships. Yeah, so one must understand, because in the end, it's the emotions that are the prominent thing, but not in the beginning. The beginning, technically, there are no emotions like that. Means there is the desire for sense gratification, you know, and that taste of that sense gratification, that will be there. And there's a need for emotion, so if we learn from the scriptures what is proper emotion and all that, then that becomes, you know, a practical application. But if we don't learn from the scriptures, from authority, what is proper emotion, then we won't know how to apply or what it is. So still, it's not going to be, I mean, the living entity is not, it's not going to be available because the scriptures have come from the Lord, so it has to be connected. But to come to the platform of pure spiritual emotion, then one must understand how to get, what is the difference between the material and the spiritual, and how to get from one to the other. Therefore, this knowledge then is important, even if it's just the basic, fundamental. But some knowledge has to be there. Otherwise, we will mistake material emotion for spiritual emotion, like that. Especially in this day and age, well, at any time, but especially when actual emotion is not being understood or tasted. So when that is obtained, then we think that this is something so wonderful, like that. Yeah, but it's something beyond that, you know. In the material world, then you means we may be trained in the sensual platform. So then, and the sensual platform is exploitive. So then we don't have proper relationships with people or deep relationships. Then if by using the form of religion we find that deep relationships are able to be established, we may completely forget about the spiritual. So we have to know that the spiritual is something beyond that. So the knowledge is important, because it's something beyond that. It's more, right? Suddenly we're turning to the Lord, because the material world is such a difficult place. So then if we find these are working so nicely, then, you know. Therefore, we see that even when these are going on, there's still so much trouble. It's still not the perfection. As we see, like Ramayana and Mahabharata, that the Dharma is going on very nicely. The relationships on the material platform are going on perfectly. Still there's trouble. Still there's not satisfaction. Because the material world is not meant for that. And that's not the position of the soul. Otherwise, still the living entity is relating to another living entity through the medium of the material energy. And they're not actually seeing beyond that. They're not seeing the soul like that. Therefore, these aspects of, you know, the religion are temporary, because they deal with the conditioned nature. Right? But you can't just work on the platform of soul without introducing the spiritual culture. And that comes only when there's purity. So by the discharge of devotional service in knowledge, right, with the desire to develop that love for Krishna, then in that fortunate situation, in good association, then we are able to come to the perfection of platform. Otherwise, then we'll just get caught up in the material scene, and that will be difficult for us. So if one doesn't come across to the actual spiritual, then the impersonal will be there. We'll see the soul, but what's the relationship? Unless you know God, you don't actually understand relationships with souls. Like that, because the relationship between souls are only can only happen if there is the commonality of service to the Lord. Right? Through service to the Lord, transcendental activity, there's relationship, right? Otherwise there's not. Otherwise it's just you're Brahman, I'm Brahman, we're all Brahman, so we're the same Brahman. So where's the relationship? There's no relationship. So that has to go beyond that. It has to go beyond that. Any questions?
You mean, so until there's a proper relationship with love, you can't really have a proper relationship with me?
Yeah, basically. Until there's proper relationship with the holy name and the proper performance of the spiritual activities. But that's where it starts. Is relationship with the devotees, relationship with the holy name, you know, and all those things that go with it, with the scriptures, you know, with the Dham, with the deity, like that. So all these are the main recommended spheres of activity. So if those are right, then the whole process will work. Now, if those aren't understood or not being engaged in properly, then it will be very difficult. So if we're chanting, not chanting properly, chanting with offenses, we're dealing with Vaishnavas not properly, you know, we're not dealing with the deities properly, we don't understand the Dham, you know, or like that, or the scriptures, we're not accepting or relating properly with the scriptures, having the faith in the scriptures, then the whole process will become weak, like that. But the central feature is chanting, you know, in the association of devotees. But that association of devotees means then we're going to hear, we're going to get that knowledge, we're going to get this, like what he's discussing now, the Sambandha Gyan. Because then everything else is based on that. If the relationship is not there, the activity can't happen. We'll just say, oh, we won't worry about it, we'll just do. But how can you do unless you know? Then it's foolish, right? If you want to do an activity that we don't know how to do, and without knowing how to do it or what or even anything involved in it, we're going to do it. It doesn't make sense, right? Like we say, we're going to drive a car, but we don't even know what a car is. And how are we to do it? We're just going to go out, and we've heard where you get in something and, you know, push a few things and move a few things and it goes down the road. You know, we might get in a bullock cart or, you know, anything. You know, get inside a can, you know, like that. We got inside something, you know, push a few things and move a few things and, you know, so that we won't know. Or like you see drone, like what's it? He didn't know what milk was. So when they handed him water that had some, you know, chalk in it, it was white. You know, he'd heard it was white and this and that, didn't really know. Then he's drinking it and he's very happy. I had drunk milk. So he doesn't know. Therefore, the activity can't be right. And the goal can't be right. So it starts with a sambandha. So one has to understand the relationship. Then it works. So this whole idea is it's just emotion. That's nice, but how do you, even within that, you have to understand. Even you say it's emotion, like the parent is taking care of the child, that's emotion. But there has to be some knowledge, you know, how to feed the child, how to take care of the child, how to deal with the child. Otherwise, the result will not be good. So emotion is not enough. There has to be that knowledge how to do it. Then it comes to the platform of the spiritual emotion. Then there's no longer need of material knowledge. But then there'll be transcendental understanding. You know, what is rasa? What's the proper activities within the rasa? You know, the proper relationships in the rasa. Like that. So that's something else, but the material knowledge won't be necessary. Right? To operate a relationship with Krishna and act in that, one doesn't have to understand the modes of nature. Once one is situated in prema. But to get to prema, one has to understand these things, how the modes of nature work, how we're entangled, how we're caught up, and are trying to establish a relationship with the material world. But once we cross that, then we will understand. Then we can, I mean, once we get to the point of we've crossed the material energy and we've developed that attraction and love for Krishna, then this knowledge is not necessary for developing or cultivating that pure love for Krishna. Like that. But it's useful then for those persons for preaching, because that's the knowledge by which they can help others cross. Anything else on this? Yes.
On the platform of spiritual emotions. By some, just speculating, maybe you can just from experience of material emotions, you can come on that platform, or by just logic, maybe.
It's something else. It means there's karma and there's jnana, then there's bhakti. Bhakti is something different and independent from this. It's a different entity. So it's not dependent upon this. These are a reflection of that. Right? It's just like from seeing the tree, you can understand the reflection. But by seeing the reflection, you can't really understand the tree. They can give you some idea so that you kind of start to focus. You know, you can point out in the shadow of the tree, well, you know, these rumply, these are where the leaves are, you know, and here this, you know, solid part here, this is where the trunk is, and kind of where the shadow ends, that's where the roots are beyond that, though the shadow doesn't have roots. Right? You know, so you can get some idea, but it itself, you can't transfer from one to the other. You know? Another example is given, let's say you want to point out the moon to somebody. Then you may say, okay, you see that tree over there. Okay, now go up this branch of the tree. And then see there between those leaves, there's a white sphere. That's the moon. So you're using the material energy as something you're going through. But it itself cannot, how do you say, it itself cannot actually elevate you to the spiritual platform. Right? If using the shastras, according to the direction of the shastras and the Vaishnavas, then you can use that material knowledge and activities to purify us of this material world, right? So it's like the taking out a thorn with a thorn. Right? It means they're both the same thing. But one is embedded as giving trouble, and the other one is free from that, and you can take it out. But once you've taken out the other thorn, with the second thorn, neither of them have. The first thorn has no use. The second only has use to get rid of the first one. Once you've gotten rid of it, then it has no use either. So it's a different thing. Otherwise, then there are the where this comes from, this idea you don't have to cultivate this knowledge. The Sahajiyas say that. So their whole idea is that the conjugal rasa in the spiritual world, you can understand that if you engage in that conjugal rasa, if you engage in the material conjugal rasa. So if you have, plenty of conjugal activities here, then you just have to make a minor intellectual adjustment, then you understand the spiritual rasa. But it's not like that. The more you become detached from the material conjugal rasa, only then you can understand the spiritual. So it's something else. Rasa, you can understand principles of rasa from it, but you can't understand the rasa itself.
Does it come only by myself a lot? Spiritual experience?
By the mercy of the Lord, but the Lord's mercy follows the devotee's mercy. So technically it's by the mercy of the devotees. So by the mercy of the Lord we get the devotees, and by the devotee's mercy then we get the Lord. Like that. So that combination. So therefore we have to, follow the directions of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. That will then get us the Lord's mercy.
Some devotees, they can be like, they're following all rules and regulations, but they look very dry, like persons, and not so much attractive. And maybe some other devotees, they look very like emotional, like personally very good, you can relate to them, but not so much knowledge, and it's also like not complete, so something is missing there. So it's where is the needle? You can get properly.
One has to go beyond the conditioned nature. It means whether they're devotees or not, there's always living entities who are socially dry and those who are socially not so dry, like that. So that, you don't have to be a devotee for that. You'll probably find that the devotee who is very congenial and very nice with everybody, if they were not a devotee, they'd be still the same. And the devotee who is more dry, that probably if they weren't a devotee, they would still be dry. So that's something else. That's nothing to do with the devotional thing. The point is that there's always going to be the performance of the devotional properly, performance of the devotional activities with the desire to please the Lord, that will give realization. So it's the realization that's of value. The knowledge is only a tool to get realization. The activities are a tool to get the realization. Right? So both of them, when they are used to please the Lord, so it's bhakti, then that gives the realization. So bhakti gives realization. Right? That whole process, the devotional process, gives the realization. But only when the activity and the knowledge are combined in devotion to the Lord, that gives the realization. Right? So if one has performs the activity without the knowledge, realization may not be very great. Or if he has the knowledge but doesn't perform the activity, then definitely there'll be no realization. Like that, we have to understanding and realization are different things. We may intellectually understand something, but that doesn't mean we realize it. Because when we realize it, we do it. So it's something else. Like that.
So that activity must need be unashilan and has to be under guidance to bring realization.
Yeah. That's why we can't just do whatever we like. Because the emotional platform tends to be, you know, it just moves however it likes. You know, so it's not steady, it'll be flickering. Sometimes it'll be here, sometimes it'll be there.
Emotional, you mean mind?
Yeah. So it has to be focused. And then also sometimes what we call emotion, we will classify it as emotion, but actually it may be a lower strata. Like lust is not actually considered an emotion. You know, like that. You know, like that, or greed, or envy, or attachment. These things aren't technically, means that's in the modern terms of what they deal with, because that's the non-Vedic materialistic culture. Even the non-Vaishnava Vedic culture will be very strongly influenced by these. So these will be taken as emotion. You know, you see something, you become envious or angry, or these, then strong feelings come, and we will take this as emotion. And so then we will consider it good. You know, as long as something's going on, some energy or some life is there, it's good. And so we get used to this, you know, low quality of energy or life. You know, so therefore, like sometimes you see, you know, it's like in the family, if the kids are like quiet and not active, then everyone thinks something's wrong. But if they're very active and doing all kinds of things, then everybody's very happy, right? The kid's happy and doing things, right? Happiness is you're active, you know, which is natural. So, but they don't care what activity they do as long as they're active. They can be doing all kinds of crazy things, as long as it's not a particular thing that annoys the parent. It can be annoying everybody else in the universe, but that doesn't matter, as long as it doesn't annoy the parent. As soon as it annoys the parent, of course, then you have to deal with it. So you're not, then one gets used to the just low quality of energy, low quality of activity. And then we take that is proper emotion. But no, the proper emotion is something else. Like that. It's another thing. You know. That is based on religion. You know? Like that. Based on religion. So that is also controlled by the modes of nature. So if someone's more pious than from previous, they'll be naturally tend to even without much training, to engage in proper pious activity. And if they're not trained, then they will tend to engage in impious activity. Okay. So emotion is something else, right? Because what we're used to is sensual or extended sensual. Like that. But there's higher taste than that. Right?
What would be an example of that, right? What would be an example of that?
It means, you know, like let's say the camaraderie between friends or husband and wife or, you know, parent and child or master and servant. You know, like that is that it's a different kind of thing. It's based on service. Like that. So it's means if it's material underlying, if you scratch deep enough, you'll come to the enjoying and how do you say, the exploitive nature. But it's packaged in the piety, so it's a very pleasant package. You know, it's the proper package, how the material energy should be functioning. But, yeah. But, so, that is there. You know, just like the one wants to, you know, protect, take care, serve, you know, deal with in a very proper way. Like that. Then that is more the feeling, the relationship. Trust, faith, these kind of things. Like that. Shelter, or the feeling of being sheltered. You know, these kind of things. So they're different from lust, anger, greed, envy, attachment, illusion. There's something else. Like that. So the Vedic culture is to establish those relationships by controlling, I mean, those emotions by controlling these lower emotions. Because unless you control lust, greed, anger, and all these things, the higher ones can't be really operated properly.
That's why we should always seek higher association.
Yeah. Higher association. This means the mind must always be, how you say, improved. You know? Otherwise the mind has a tendency to be sustain an unimproved condition. You know, just whatever it dreams up is good enough. But then it has to be trained to come to a higher platform of what things it should desire, what things it shouldn't desire. Otherwise they all come up. You know.
What are the qualities by which we can identify what is spiritual attachment?
When spiritual attachment means you have your spiritual activities, and you know, so when we become attached to those activities, so in the beginning that attachment is because we find pleasure in it, but that's fine because still one's attached to spiritual, but eventually it'll be that one is attached to pleasing Krishna through those activities, just like in the beginning we become attached to chanting because it's nice. But ultimately, because the name is Krishna, but we're still attached for our own purposes. We find pleasure in it. It makes our mind peaceful, makes the heart satisfied. But that's us. So, but as we do that, still, because it's focused on Krishna, we will become elevated. And from that taste will come attachment, and from that attachment will come a static emotion. And then in there it will transform into its purpose is pleasing Krishna. And then it will transform into prema. So the whole idea is anything, we're attracted to Krishna, then that's good. Okay. But we have to understand that there's still, it has to be developed. You know, the attractions there today has to be developed. So it's always, it's dynamic, expanding. You never just leave it. Something that you just leave doesn't get better. Faithful Lahiri Mahashaya then said, "Is there something higher than the impersonal Brahman? The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the origin of the impersonal Brahman. Then why do the philosophers not leave the impersonal Brahman and worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead instead?" The saintly Babaji laughed and said, "Brahma, the four Kumaras, Sukadeva Goswami, Narada, Shiva, and all other truly great philosophers took shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead's feet." Lahiri Mahashaya said, The Supreme Personality of Godhead has a form situated within space, then that form must also be limited in spatial terms. How then can the spatially limited form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead be the resting place of the all-pervading, spatially limitless, impersonal Brahman? The Babaji replied, even in the material world, the element ether is also all-pervading and spatially limitless. Why then should the impersonal Brahman be considered so glorious merely because it is all-pervading and spatially limitless? Spatially or spatially? Yeah, but there's no... Okay. It's just such a different spelling. And spatially limitless. From the splendor of his transcendental limbs, the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifests the all-pervading, spatially limitless, impersonal Brahman. And at the same time, his transcendental form is spatially limited, situated in a specific place. Who has seen anyone like him? Because no one is like him, and because he has no rival, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is superior to the impersonal Brahman. His form is wonderfully attractive. In his transcendental form, all pervasiveness, omniscience, omnipotence, the greatest mercy, and the greatest bliss are gloriously manifest in their completeness. Is this form good? What virtue does it not have? What power does it not have? It is an amorphous, all-pervading, unknowable something. Is an amorphous, all-pervading, unknowable something good? The truth is that the impersonal Brahman is the qualityless aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Personality and impersonality exist side by side in the handsome form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The impersonal Brahman is merely one aspect of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This formless, changeless, qualityless, unknowable, and immeasurable feature of the Lord is liked by short-sighted persons. However, they who see everything do not like any feature but the original and complete form of the Lord. The Vaishnavas cannot place their faith in the formless, impersonal Brahman. For to do so would block their eternal nature and also block their pure love for Lord Krishna. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, is the resting place of both features, the qualityless Brahman and the quality-filled Supreme Person. He is an ocean of transcendental bliss, and therefore he is attractive to all pure souls, all pure spirit souls. Lahiri, Krishna was born, performed activities, and then left his body at death. How is it possible that his form is eternal? Babaji, Sri Krishna's form is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss. His birth, activities, and so-called death are not material. Lahiri, why do the Mahabharata and other scriptures describe him in that way? Babaji, the eternal absolute truth is beyond description. Pure souls see Lord Krishna's form and pastimes. These persons then describe these both with words. These words are like ordinary historical accounts of material persons. They who know the true meaning of the Mahabharata and other scriptures understand Lord Krishna's pastimes and other features in one way, and the unintelligent materialists understand Lord Krishna's pastimes and other features in a different way. Lahiri, when one meditates on Lord Krishna's form, in one's heart naturally rises the idea of a form limited by both time and space. What other way is there to think of Lord Krishna's form? Babaji, thinking is an activity of the mind. As long as the mind is not purified and spiritualized, the mind's activity of thinking and meditating cannot be spiritual in its nature. When it develops a devotional attitude, the mind gradually becomes spiritualized. then the mind's activity of thinking and meditating is inevitably spiritual in nature. When the Vaishnava devotees who delight in devotional service chant the holy names of Lord Hari, the material world has no power to touch them. They are spiritualized. Residing in the spiritual world, they meditate on Lord Krishna's daily activities. In this way, they obtain the bliss of confidential service to the Lord. Lahiri, please be merciful and give that spiritual understanding to me. Babaji, when you give up all material arguments and doubts, and when you chant the holy names day after day, then after a few days, genuine spiritual understanding will rise in your heart. As long as these material arguments remain, your mind will stay in the shackles of material understanding. When you taste the nectar of the holy name, the material shackles will become loosened. Then the spiritual world will be gloriously manifested in your heart. Lahiri, please be merciful and tell me about that I desire. So we see here is that as long as the anarta nivriti has not developed enough, then one will stay bound up in the kind of material concepts. But as anarta nivriti becomes more developed, more manifest, then one can get to the stage where one tastes the holy name, Aruchi. So at that point, then very quickly it develops. So from Shraddha up to Nishta, that's a little slow. Then Nishta, one can go through very quickly to Ruchi. And then from Ruchi, then it works, starts to go very quickly. Babaji, the mind in words cannot understand it. Only when one obtains the bliss of spiritual life can one understand it. Give up all your arguments, and for a few days chant the holy names of Lord Hari. Then all your doubts will go far away. Then you will no longer ask any question of anyone. Lahiri, I know that a person who has faith in Lord Krishna and tastes the nectar of his holy names attains the highest of all goals. I well understood the relationship of the Lord and the individual soul. I will take shelter of the Lord's holy names. Babaji, that is the best of all. Understand well your relationship with the Lord, and you will directly see the spiritual truth. Lahiri, I understand the truth of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is the ultimate form of the Supreme. The impersonal Brahman and the Supersoul are subordinate to Him. He is all-pervading. In the spiritual world, He manifests His wonderful form. He is a person. He is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss. He is the master of all potencies. Even though He is the master of all potencies, He is always overcome with bliss in the company of His Ladini Shakti, pleasure potency. Now please tell me about the individual spirit souls. Babaji, among the limitless potencies of Sri Krishna, one is called Tatastha Shakti, positioned between the spiritual and material worlds. This potency can reside in either of them. This potency is also called Jiva Tattva, the individual spirit souls. The individual souls are tiny particles of spirit. Because they are tiny particles, they may attain bondage in the material world. However, because they are pure spirit, they may also reside eternally in the supremely blissful spiritual world. The individual spirit souls are of two kinds. One, souls who reside in the spiritual world, and two, souls in bondage who reside in the material world. Souls in bondage in the material world are of two kinds, one, intelligent, and two, unintelligent. Birds, beasts, and human beings who do not strive to attain the supreme goal are the unintelligent, materially bound souls. Human beings who follow the path of the Vaishnava religion are intelligent. They who are not Vaishnavas, do not actively strive for the real goal of life. Therefore, the scriptures declare the service to Vaishnavas and association with Vaishnavas are the best of all activities. Intelligent human beings who have faith in the scriptures and chant the holy names of Lord Hari naturally associate with Vaishnavas. They who are not intelligent do not have faith in the scriptures and do not chant the holy names of Lord Krishna. Even though they may serve the deity form of Lord Krishna according to the rules passed down through the disciplic succession, in their hearts such unintelligent persons do not properly honor Vaishnavas. Lahiri. Now I understand the truth about Lord Krishna and the truth about the individual spirit souls. Now please tell me the truth about the illusory potency Maya. Balaji. Maya is matter. Maya is one of the potencies of Lord Krishna. Maya is also called apara shakti, material potency. And bahiranga shakti, external potency. As the shadow stays far away from light, so Maya stays far away from Lord Krishna and his devotees. Maya manifested the 14 material worlds, earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego, which makes one think, I am this material body. The gross and subtle material bodies of the bound souls are manifested by Maya. When a soul attains liberation, his spiritual body is cleansed of Maya's influence. To the extent he is tightly bound by Maya, to that extent the soul is far away from Lord Krishna. To the extent the soul is free from Maya's influence, to that extent the soul is able to see Lord Krishna face to face. The material universe, which is a place of sense pleasures for the bound souls, has sprouted from Lord Krishna's will. The spirit souls do not stay forever in the material world. The material world is only a prison for the spirit souls. Lahiri, O Master, now please tell me of the eternal relationship that exists between Maya, the individual soul, and Lord Krishna. Babaji, the tiny spirit soul is an eternal servant of Lord Krishna. The world of Maya is the soul's prison. By associating with devotees and chanting the holy names, the soul attains Lord Krishna's mercy. Then, restored to his original spiritual form, the soul tastes the nectar of direct service to Lord Krishna in the spiritual world. These are the confidential relationships between these three. Without understanding this, how can anyone engage in devotional service?